Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Corulla. Eddie Pence is at his son's baseball game. He's been playing hooky, but we're going to just jump right in. We have a wonderful guest, NK Band lead guitarist, a very good friend of mine. Please welcome Ray Bergstrom. Ray Bergstrom, say hello.
What's up? What's up?
Oh, our studio audience loves you already. So,
Dude,
we've been playing music for almost a decade, and I've never had this chance to interview
you. It's been about 10 years.
You
think it was 2008.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You are correct. You're right on the money. Almost to the month and day. Because I think around February, March is when...
We played some gig on the beach.
We did? Santa Barbara?
That was... No, it was maybe Venice or Huntington Beach or somewhere.
Ah. Not Mozambique.
Nope.
I don't remember.
There's a big American flag on the stage.
Oh, dude, I remember that. That was the Marina Palooza,
yeah.
4th of July. That was your first gig?
I think so.
Dude, that's crazy. Wow, that takes me back. Man, the gigs just all start to blur together, man.
It's been a lot of them.
So before we get into the music stuff, I think it's pretty remarkable that you teach physics.
I do.
And you've been doing it for about...
About 10 years.
About 10 years?
Yeah, 9 years, I think.
How did you get into wanting to teach physics and studying that? Before we get into the music, I want to get into the science.
Yeah, before music. Good question. I got the science bug in high school when a teacher of mine gave me a physics book to read. He was actually my cross-country coach, Lyle Hatridge. And I was working with him one summer. I was a TA for the summer computer class he taught. And he gave me this book. I remember it's called The Recursive Universe. And it's about physics and computers. William Poundstone.
Nice.
And so I read this book and I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever read. It really opened my eyes to how interesting science could be. I think I was 16 at the time.
Wow.
15 or 16. And I think that's really what got me interested in it.
And you studied it in college, right?
Yeah, college and grad school.
And then you were almost, you were on the brink of having your PhD, and then you were like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. I was in a PhD program, UCLA, in physics for a long time. Life took some twists and turns, and I realized that wasn't...
Your calling.
Wasn't really my calling, yeah.
Well, the funny thing, too, it's like, while you're doing this...
While I'm doing that, I'm playing guitar all the time. Guitar all the time, yeah. I've always been into music. I took piano lessons as a kid and started playing the guitar when I was 13. And, you know, always played in bands in high school and college. And then I kept just gradually getting more and more serious about it as time went on. It wasn't obviously my path when I was younger.
Right. Well, you didn't know it was your path.
Yeah. And I thought that the science research thing was going to be my path. And then, you know, life happens and your interests change. And fortunately, my late 20s, when I realized I wasn't going to be a research physicist, I had at least acquired enough experience and education that I could have a pretty cool day job teaching. And I was... you know, getting up to my ears in music about that time, too. So it kind of worked out to help me, you know, support myself while I started learning the ropes of the music business.
And the funny thing is, you also went to school with a lot of people I used to sing with.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Schneider, Chris Ward,
mm-hmm.
a bunch of people from the Los Angeles Children's Chorus. So our paths didn't cross until Chris Ward said, oh man, you gotta meet my buddy Ray. I'm going to bring him to your show. I want to say it was the Roxy. I think you came to the Roxy show, or it was the House of Blues. Do you remember which show you came
to? I think I saw you play more than once, maybe two or three times.
Okay.
I know one was at the House of Blues. I'm pretty sure another one was at the Roxy.
Okay, Roxy show was Adam's first gig with the band,
oh, wow.
who's also been on the show. So Adam plays drums for NK Band. So I remember you coming to the shows first, and then randomly I was talking to Phil, and Phil told me that when you were in high school, I think there was either middle school or high school, there was some project, a senior project, or
uh-huh.
I don't know if it was a senior project. It was like, do something that you're passionate about.
Right,
and
right.
nobody knew you played guitar when you were in, you know, middle school. And you came out and did this crazy shredding.
Yeah, I think that was our high school
solo guitar.
We had this high school talent show, variety right. show. They called it Moulin Rouge. As though it were a nightclub at our in our high school. And I remember, I think that was my junior year of high school, me and my buddy Shinji Furuya. Shout out to Shinji, who's one of the most naturally talented musicians I've
He's a good dude.
ever
He's a
met.
Good dude.
He and I just put together some tunes, a little medley of songs to play at the talent show, and we kind of awkwardly stood there on stage and played our guitars and then got a standing ovation, and I couldn't believe people liked it so much. And that really, so while that the book that my cross-country coach gave me inspired me in science, it was that moment on stage in high school playing at the talent show that I got bit by the music bug.
You're like, oh my god, I can be a superstar.
It was really exciting. Maybe still the best gig I've ever played.
Hey, watch it, man. Watch it. No, but there is something about that first moment, that catalyst.
Absolutely.
Where you're like, oh my god, I want to chase whatever this is, because this feels like a natural high, and it's just...
Yeah, and it was that same time in my life. It was also when I was about 16 or 17. I think when you're that age, you just get really excited about stuff. There's nothing like being a teenager and learning about something cool and really getting passionate about it. So that happened to me with both science and music, I guess, around the same time.
And let me ask you this, too. Like, when did you start playing guitar, and what was the moment of zen, whether it was a song you heard on the radio or a band that you loved? What was that moment of zen that made you pick up the guitar and want to start playing?
Okay, another shout out to a friend of mine. I was inspired by this friend, Eric Rosen, where I saw him play at a talent show at a summer camp that I went to, and I think we were 12 or 13, and he played Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Nice, good choice.
I remember that one, and I thought it was immensely cool that he was doing that on stage. And I had been playing piano for a while and had kind of stopped for a few years, and that rekindled my interest in music, and particularly in playing the guitar. And so as soon as I got home from the summer camp, I found a guitar in the closet. My dad had a guitar.
What?
So I picked it up.
And, electric or acoustic?
Acoustic guitar.
All right.
Harmony was the manufacturer.
Yeah. They used to sell those at Sears way
Maybe
back
that's where,
in the day.
That might have been where he got it from. And I remember, you know, this is the early 90s. We didn't have internet or anything.
Right.
And I went to the grocery store and bought a magazine, Guitar for the Practicing Musician. I want to say it was about September 92. I think the Black Crowes were on the cover. And there was some transcriptions in there, and I started reading the tab. There was a Metallica tune, Wherever I May Roam. I remember that one. I think a Black Crowes tune.
So you figured out tab.
Well, it's just you put your fingers where the where the numbers say to put your fingers.
But you know what? It's not one of, you know, like, honestly, it's not something that if you're just looking at it, you're just like, oh, I get this right away. So it took a lot of
patience.
I'm
sure that my previous musical background playing the piano helped. I mean, tab tells you where to put your fingers, but it doesn't necessarily tell you that much about the rest of the music.
Right,
so
right.
I think my previous experience helped.
So you started with rock and roll, metal, rock.
Rock and roll, yeah, man. My when I was that age, 13, 14, my favorite bands were Led Zeppelin and Megadeth, and now that I'm 39, my favorite bands are Led Zeppelin and Megadeth.
Dude, Led Zeppelin is better than that. I love, love, love Led Zeppelin. And that's a band that just keeps on growing as far as like how much I love them. Every year that goes by, I'm like, man, every time I hear a song, I'm like, God, they sound so much ridiculous.
So much vibe.
So much vibe. And it was just like, they were only together for like maybe like 5-6 years, something like that. This short time. But it was like the timing of when they played, who was doing what in the scene, and just like the British invasion. It's just remarkable. So great bands. For me, when I was 11 years old, and I remember listening to Guns N' Roses and Def Leppard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, dude, whatever this is, this ain't opera, and I love it, man, you know? So, anyway, so...
Well, those Def Leppard records were like... They were like the physics research of recording. Those recordings sound so incredible. They're larger than life. And I think a lot of people are just captivated by the sound of those recordings.
Do you remember when we played Summerfest and we were loading guitars into the car and Def Leppard was playing in the amphitheater? Do you remember that?
I'm not sure if I remember that year.
That was a moment for me. Uh-huh. Like, because I used to, you know, we used to, you know, drive to opera rehearsals or singing rehearsals, and I would have that Def Leppard tape on repeat.
Uh-huh.
And so for me, being in that moment playing a festival and hearing Def Leppard, I was like, holy shit, this is the real deal, Holyfield.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So anyways, back to you, Ray. So you started playing acoustic guitar. When was the moment that you picked up an electric guitar?
All right. So I shout out to all these friends from the past, because you know, my music experience is pretty much all just tied to people. Tied to people I know. My friend Jason DeBose at school had a Strat, black Stratocaster that he no longer needed. And he sold it to me for a low, low price. And that was my first electric guitar. I think I was 14, maybe.
Did he give you an amp too, I hope?
I got a little PV practice amp with
it. Dude, I think everybody starts with a PV practice amp. I think that's just like the rite of passage. That's the terminal everybody goes through. And it ends up like farting out like maybe 6 months in, like it just stops working.
I think that amp still might be alive. I don't know who owns it now, but that guitar ended up in another friend's hands after I had gotten some use out of it later on in high school. I went to another poly friend, Alex O. What's up, Alex?
And did you play in any bands in middle school or high school or not yet?
Middle school, no. I was just kind of noodling, just learning. And then high school, I joined jazz band. I had no idea how to play jazz at all, but it was fun.
So what jazz tunes were you doing in high school? You remember?
Man, yeah, really simple ones, like some of the simple Herbie tunes, like
Cantaloupe
Island, and blues, like stuff where I didn't really have to know what I was doing. But it was just fun to be there and play the guitar. And
who was like a major influence guitar wise? Because you know,
at
you
that
know,
age growing
yeah,
up,
yeah, that age growing up, you're in high school. We're gonna take our listeners through the whole journey.
All right, journey. Yeah. So when I first started playing, like I said, Zeppelin was, man, that just killed me. So I love Jimmy Page, and I mentioned Megadeth. So Marty Friedman, that guy, man, the lead guitarist of Megadeth at the time. He opened my ears, I think, to unusual harmonies and arpeggios and interesting phrasing and inflections on the instrument. It was, you know, way beyond basic rock stuff I'd heard before. And then a couple years later in high school, I started, you know, really getting into nerdy progressive rock.
Like
I was a huge
Dream Theater.
Yeah, I was way into Dream Theater and Yes, Kansas, the Dixie Dregs, Genesis.
And you're in high school listening to these bands?
Yeah,
that's way ahead of your time. I mean, it's just crazy to me that you're listening to prog rock when you're in high school. Let me just like give you a heads up. That's not what normal kids were doing. They were not listening to Dream Theater.
No, they weren't. But, you know, I had one or two friends who were into it. My friend Shinji was into it. I remember this kid, Brett Whittemore, was really into Jethro Tull. So we nerded out on Jethro Tull and Yes and and the old classic prog bands quite a bit. So that's, I don't know, that's my embarrassing secret, is that my favorite music for a good 5 or 10 years of my life was progressive rock, and I still like it. I wouldn't say I love it as much as I did back then. I think
it's nostalgic.
It's definitely nostalgic for me. I think the thrill at the time was hearing rock music that was, at least to my ears, as quote-unquote complex as maybe classical music. I was just into it for the complexity and weirdness. And some of it has aged with me, some of it hasn't. I think bands that are able to write good melodies and tunes and actually have some
crazy chops.
Yeah, actually have legitimate chops, right. Not just being weird for the sake of weird, but who could actually really play. That stuff is still, I still dig that, but some of it is just weird for the sake of being weird.
Right, and you know what? That I respect that, but I'm kind of in the same boat. I kind of
like Primus. Like I was into Primus a little bit, and
that makes sense.
And Zappa. And it was like, I was listening to that just because it was weird.
Right.
I totally respect their conviction and their innovation. It's just hard for me to listen to now.
Okay, so then now you get into college, and then how were your listening, you know, choices changing?
In college, I started getting into jazz pretty hard.
Okay.
Any
particular player, Barney Kessel?
Well, I wasn't really listening to jazz guitar players then. Charlie Parker was the first jazz I really
enjoyed. Dude, this is why we connect. Enjoyed. This is why we're in a band.
Yeah.
Charlie Parker's still my favorite.
I remember I got a Charlie Parker compilation, and then I was like, whoa, this is really heavy. This is really deep. And then I got into Coltrane pretty soon after that, and Coltrane still is probably my favorite to this day.
I love Charlie Parker and Coltrane, and then there's everybody else as far as horn players. But yes, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, and certainly Miles. I like Miles more for his band leading and composition and stuff. And when I hear people shred, I listen to Bird and Train.
Right.
But I love Miles' playing too. It's not, especially as a guitar player, especially playing acoustic gypsy jazz guitar, which I do a lot now. You can't play like Miles Davis, because it just goes plink.
Right.
Plink.
Right.
Like, you got to play some notes on an acoustic guitar. Electric guitar, you can do the Miles
thing.
Well,
the sustain.
With the sustain, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, that's awesome. And did you start playing in jazz bands in college?
I did. And I
started, were minoring in music, I think, too, right? Didn't you take some music classes?
I took a lot of music classes. I don't even know if I had enough to get a minor.
Okay.
But I took all the jazz classes that were offered. You know, meanwhile, I'm studying physics is my real major, but
right.
I took all the jazz classes in the apartment, and I still don't really. So the thing is, by this point, I really like jazz and I like listening to it, but I still don't have any idea how to play it.
Right.
That's how I completely I completely was ignorant. I completely sucked. I didn't even know how to approach it. I just doodled to the best of my limited abilities.
Well, isn't it, you probably are still like in awe. Like, I'm in awe of like great jazz players that just know, they can hear the changes, even if they're crazy changes, and know the crazy notes, like the 13ths and the 9ths, to just know when to hit those at the right time. Just play. Like, Mahesh is one of the best pianists I've ever heard. And Will Harrington, too. He's one of the best as well. Those guys are like straight up. They're schooled in jazz. They know every kind of like nook and cranny of that. And I'm in awe of that, because I feel like jazz musicians just have this just discipline for music no other kind of discipline, no other genre of music kind of carries, you know, in the same way.
Yeah. And I think I've figured out much later in life, I would say within the past 5 years, is where I'm starting to get it. I wouldn't say I'm a great jazz player, but I'm starting to understand how to approach it now. And really, what I didn't get at the time, what I understand now, is it really boils down to acquiring vocabulary.
Right.
It's learning how to speak. When I was younger, I thought, I don't know how I got this misinterpretation, but I thought great jazz players just sort of sat in a room in a vacuum and tried to come up with really good ideas independently on their own.
Right.
And unfortunately, I had the same interpretation of how scientists work, too.
Right.
There's this idea of the lone genius who just ponders in a room by themselves. But I think in any human endeavor,
it's about 99%
of progress is exchanging ideas with other people and learning the language of your discipline.
That's interesting that they both paralleled right around the same time.
It's also interesting that I got the wrong idea about how they worked, and I think that set me back in both my attempted careers.
What's cool about it, too, is it keeps you in awe of it. You know what I mean? The fact that it was such a U-turn to kind of figure out, oh, it's nothing like that. It kind of shatters, you know, like a wall for you. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of opens a whole new realm to kind of see, oh, this is
it's way
created.
Much more about people than it is about being a lone genius.
Yes.
It's about learning from other people, learning to speak the common language, and then adding your personality to that dialogue.
And did you start getting into blues, rock, soul, funk at that time? Because that's what happened to me. Like, I got into jazz, and then it took me down this terminal of all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Steely Dan, for example.
Yeah, oh man, I listened to a ton of Steely Dan in college. They might have been, the last couple years of college, my favorite band.
That's the only band our whole band loves. Like, wholeheartedly, it's the only band our whole band
loves. Yeah, I've seen them 6 or 7 times. But yeah, the other musical doors really opened for me in college were, like soul and funk. I was really into Tower of Power and Earth, Wind, and Fire. Steely Dan, which is sort of in that ballpark. Because I played the one real band I was in college was a 7-piece horn band, or 7 horns, 11 people, I think, in the band, like a Tower of Power style funk band. And so that got me
awesome
hip to that kind of music.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
That first record, well, I don't think it's the first record, actually, Tower of Power, just the self-titled record.
Yeah.
Still one of my favorite records is What is Hip, all those great tracks. So you're getting influenced by jazz, soul, funk. Are you playing in ensembles, or are you still just kind of
I'm playing in the jazz combos at school. They're all full of people like me where we don't really know what we're doing, because it wasn't a jazz school at all. That was it was a university, and they had a music department, and within that music department, there was a tiny little jazz department, which, looking back, was perfect for me, because if I had been at a school that had a really good jazz program, I wouldn't have had a chance to participate.
Right.
Because I wasn't good at it.
Right. It kind of gave you like a little incubator.
Yeah, it was a safe space for me to gently learn.
And then when did you get into Django Reinhardt? Because I know he's a major influence on you now.
Yeah. I'm going to fast forward a few years from
now. Yeah, we'll jump. We'll hop around, Ray.
Yeah, the Django thing happened, I guess, about 9 years ago. So,
was it the movie, Sweet and Lowdown?
It wasn't that movie, although I did see that when I was in college. And I did have a Django record when I was maybe 20 or something, just because I'd seen his name in a guitar magazine. Yeah, I guess it was about 9 years ago, and I was at UCLA at the time trying to do my physics thing, but spending most of my time hanging out in the music building, again, attempting very poorly to play jazz. And I met Ethan Emerson, who is my partner in crime in the Icy Hot Club, my gypsy jazz band.
Yeah, shout out to Ethan.
And he and I played in several groups together. At UCLA, we did an Afrobeat band. That's where I learned about Fela Kuti and stuff. At one point, he said, "Hey, do you want to try playing some Django tunes with me?" I'm like, "Oh, Django? Yeah, I've heard of him. I've got a record. That's pretty cool." I didn't know anything about it, and I would say that gypsy jazz has been the most positive influence on my playing and musicianship since I picked up a guitar.
That's amazing. Why would you say that?
Because that's what really hipped me to this idea that music is about community and language and sharing ideas with people and communicating and being a part of some sort of community or culture.
What I love about it, too, it's like a subgenre. It's like this small, tiny circle, but people are well-versed in the styles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think you've done a couple jazz, gypsy jazz festivals or gone to a bunch of them and just met and networked with a whole bunch of players.
Yeah.
And it's like you're all speaking the same language, the same
exactly. Band. I can go anywhere in the world, meet a gypsy jazz player, and we can be playing tunes instantly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's the joy of music.
It's really, really cool. And being introduced to gypsy jazz, I think, has finally shown me how to approach learning music at a high level.
Right.
Where my practice and my study is on developing a language so I can communicate with other musicians in the style, and then applying those principles to other styles of music,
right.
It opened my eyes how to just practice and learn in general. And again, I would say that doesn't apply just to music either. I would say for any field that you're in, this is the best way to learn.
Right.
Realize that you need to participate with people, learn the common language, have a dialogue. Be involved, be invested.
Well, the funny thing about you and I playing too, it's like I realize now I really threw you to the wolves, just throwing you in this band because
I didn't know anything at the time.
And the funny thing too is about Chris, when Chris Ward was like, "Hey man, you got to hear my friend play," you know how many times I'd heard that and been disappointed by musicians that their friends of friends had said, "Oh, you got to hear my buddy play drums or bass," or
right.
And I'd bring him in to either play with the band or audition for the band or be a sub. And man, it was like night and day. It made me realize, okay, the musicians I'm playing with are awesome, and these friends of friends aren't as awesome. So like when Chris was like, yeah, you got to hear my buddy Ray play, I was like, yeah, we'll make it happen.
Sure.
And I didn't reach out to you to actually jam for maybe a year, maybe more, maybe like 3 years, 2-3 years, something like that. And then when we actually jammed, we went into the rehearsal space that we're still in, and dude, you just blew my mind. I was like, this kid is, I don't know where he's been in the LA scene, but this kid can play. And you just like would just whip out these fiery solos, which you still do. Like I love hearing you play, man.
Thank you. Every time
we play together, when you play solos, you just take it to places. And sometimes I even use some of your solo ideas to put on my own soloing records or, whatever. But, yeah, man, I'm like a fan of your playing. I'm a fan of you.
Thank you.
And the cool thing is you're now well-versed in calypso, African, gypsy jazz, metal, rock, blues, prog. It's like you've gone through all these different rites of passage. You've fronted your own band, which we're going to play a track off in a bit. And you've also learned from the masters of gypsy jazz and kind of created this other ensemble of learning the craft of writing and arrangement. So what's the most valuable thing in that breadth of playing with people, touring? What's the most valuable thing you've learned as a player or musician?
Yeah, well, I think, like I've been saying, I think the most valuable thing is to realize that music is about being able to communicate with other people, sharing, learning how to develop a common language with other musicians that hopefully translates to the audience that's listening. I'm answering your question definitely more from the perspective of an instrumentalist who's playing,
and
I know that you have maybe more of a songwriter perspective, maybe a more holistic perspective. I'm giving you the guitarist in the trenches perspective of how I can be most useful in a musical situation.
I think we're kind of saying the same thing, because for me, just with everything I've done, listening has become so much more important than it ever, I think, I thought it would be in the beginning. You know what I mean? It's like you're like just trying to express and write and stuff, or when you're doing your own band, but you just get to this point where it's like there's a listening where all the parts, you're listening to everything all at once, and how everything is playing off each other, and how those dynamics can affect somebody. It's like
one of
the greatest things I love about NK bands, like we'll be playing and somebody maybe will play a little softer, and everybody will kind of shift and just kind of like create a dynamic, a shift, in the music that wasn't, planned or really orchestrated. So it is, to me, about that communication
and
the listening.
That ability, I think that ability to respond when you're listening comes from having this large wellspring of musical ideas that you've assimilated over the years.
Well, let's play a track. What do you want us to play first?
So I brought some tunes from the sort of rock band that I conceived of a couple of years ago. And this is more of a demo level recording quality, although I like the tunes. And this band is called Red Wind Tembler. It's a trio. I'm playing guitar, I'm singing a little bit. I've got Blas Perez on the bass. Blas is touring with Danny Harrison. That's George Harrison.
George's son. Yeah. I got it, buddy. This ain't my first rodeo.
I knew you knew that. Just letting the people know. Blas is the real deal. And our good buddy John Risk, who's a fabulous drummer, hitting the drums.
But is he a risk taker?
He's a risk taker on the drums. All right. I'll tell you that.
And what do you want to play first?
So I guess I'll do the instrumental one. It's called Chaparral. And my whole concept with this band was to make it a spaghetti western hard rock band.
Oh, right. That's my spaghetti western song. This is Red Wing Tembler with Chaparral.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Man, that was dope.
That's my soundtrack to my imaginary Western movie.
So are you doing like the first position pickup? Are you doing just the bridge pickup on a lot of that?
Wow, very technical question. Yeah, it's a bridge pickup for most of it, and the bridge went to the neck pickup for a slight change in tone. Yeah,
I love the bends you were doing, just the sounds. You really nailed that style. So is that like a thing, like just being the role that you are in a lot of bands? Do you just like want to get well versed in a style, know the ingredients?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the best, right? It's like it's amazing when people don't know styles and get gigs playing that style, just don't understand.
Yeah, it's funny. So you know, in gypsy jazz, I can hear within 1 second whether someone actually knows. Yeah, it's right. it's really obvious. But it's funny because you'll hear people who it's not that they're bad players, it's just that they're not intimately familiar with the style. And I love the style. I want people to play it. But there is a certain amount of knowledge you need to have before you'll sound remotely.
It's like knowing the vocabulary. Authentic. It goes back to that.
You got to know the vocabulary, yeah.
The funny thing is, you said something really awesome when we were off the air while the song was playing. You said this was a theme to an imaginary Western movie. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, this band, Red Wind Tembler, I had this, I think I was inspired by, you know, listening to the surf music. Certainly the rock band Muse was a big inspiration for this.
I hear Dick Dale too.
Yeah, Dick Dale for sure. Even Tom Petty a little bit. Like Muse and Tom Petty both have these fairly hilarious music videos that are sort of spoofs on Westerns. They're both kind of space Westerns. What Tom Petty too? I think it's You Got Lucky. I think that's the one that's a space Western music video. And then Muse has Knights of Sidonia. And that aesthetic appealed to me somehow. And so I wanted to write music that captured that vibe a little bit.
And it's spaghetti Westerns. That's a very specific
genre. And I was watching, you know, I watched
Butch Cassidy,
the Good, Bad, the Ugly, right. Stuff like that. Listen to a lot of Marconi, Ennio Marconi. I think
Quentin sound. Tarantino's movie, the soundtrack for that, didn't he?
I think he did. I think it was the first soundtrack he'd done in like 2 decades or something.
He's like, yeah, I guess I'll take the work.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into a performance. You're going to play us something live, right?
Yeah, I guess I'll play a little gypsy jazz tune. I got my gypsy guitar with me.
Talk to us a little bit about this guitar, because it's definitely very different than most guitars. Let's talk about the sound hole. It's an oval instead of a regular circle.
Yeah, so gypsy jazz instruments are all kind of modeled on guitars from the 30s that Django played. People generally call them Selmer-style guitars or McAfee-style guitars, Selmer or Selmax. Selmer is a music instrument company, and they've been around forever. They make a lot of stuff, but they made a certain style of guitar.
Don't they make reeds, too? They make reeds for saxophones?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think they
make
do.
Horns. And so these guitars are different from flat-top acoustic guitars. In that they have a longer scale length, the bracing is different inside, the sound hole is different.
The bridge is different.
The bridge is different.
I've never seen a bridge like that on an acoustic. That's crazy.
Yeah, the bridge comes from kind of arch-top guitar building. So it's almost like a mashup of an arch-top, like jazz guitar.
And classical guitar, right?
Yeah, I guess there's elements of classical guitar too. The headstock is kind of classical and guitar influenced. But then it's a flat top, or most of them are. So that comes from kind of a traditional acoustic guitar building. It's kind of this hybrid of different guitar styles, and it gives you a very bright, very mid-rangey, crisp tone, and it's the sound of gypsy jazz. You can't really play gypsy jazz and sound that authentic on another style of guitar.
It's got a sound. That's what's awesome about it.
Definitely got a sound.
What are you going to play us?
I think I'll play a standard that's real common in gypsy jazz repertoire. I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
Well, how about just the title?
I Can't Give You Anything But Love, Baby, I believe is the full title.
Here it comes. Ray Bergstrom.
Let's take off the headphones.
No problem. Here it comes.
I can play a little better this way. I can't give you anything but love, baby. That's the only thing I've plenty of. Oh, baby, dream a while and scheme a while. You're sure to find happiness, and I guess all those things you've always pined for. Gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, Woolworths doesn't sell. Oh, baby, so that happy day, you know darn well. Oh, baby, I can't give you anything but love. Baby, diamond bracelets, Woolworths doesn't sell. Oh, baby, so that happy day, you know darn well. Baby, I can't give you anything. I can't give you anything. Oh, I can't give you anything but love.
Yeah! Dude, you know what I love about Gypsy Jazz are the chords, man. I see you playing some half-diminished chords, just like cool minor voicings. Man, that's the intricate part of Gypsy Jazz that I admire it so much, because I just love chords, and man, it's all chords. It really is all chords.
Yeah, it's a whole different set of characteristic chords that people use in that style. It's a little different from other styles of music, even from other styles of jazz.
That's what
and it's
makes
very
it
guitaristic.
Thing.
One thing that's cool about this is, unlike other types of jazz, which are maybe more
piano,
right, bass, drums based, Gypsy Jazz is really guitar centric. It's all about stringed instruments.
Is it just because of the intervals between the strings, or?
Well, I mean, it's because of where the music comes from. It comes from gypsies, Django Reinhardt in particular, who got hip to American jazz, but had their traditional instruments they were playing, which were mostly stringed instruments, guitars, banjos, violins, upright bass, and then some other stuff like accordion, sometimes clarinet, sometimes cymbal arm, which is the thing you hit with mallets. So it's mainly stringed instruments because that's what the people had.
Right.
They didn't have saxophones and pianos and drums and stuff, and so you're talking about the chords. The rhythm guitar is both giving the harmony and the rhythm of the tune. The rhythm guitar is the drummer. So when I'm playing, there's no drummer needed.
Right.
That's the beat.
You're kind of giving the backbeat too, which is really hip.
Yeah,
and you know what? I have a theory. You can't be in a bad mood listening to Gypsy Jazz. That's one of the reasons I think you probably love playing it. Because it's like, it just feels good to hear. Uh-huh. I can't imagine how good it feels just to play it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Of course, there's some stuff that's more melancholy, that's a little darker. Has that.
But there's always beauty in that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, Gypsy
The swing stuff,
has
yeah,
that
the swing stuff.
Kind
Gypsy
of roaring,
swing is very,
roaring feel of the 20s
very
and 40s,
uplifting.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, let's play another track from the next, from this record. Red Wind Templar.
Red Wind Templar, yeah.
Talk to us about the title of the band.
Yeah, so the title is a very L.A. I wanted it to sound, again, sort of spaghetti western and also be connected to Los Angeles. So the Red Wind is another name for the Santa Ana winds that we experience in Southern California occasionally, usually in the fall and maybe the early spring sometimes. And Templar is another name for earthquake. And sometimes people associate Santa Ana winds with impending earthquakes. So I just mashed those two names together.
Love it. Well, let's hear it. Red Wind Templar, this song's called Wildfire.
Thank you.
Hot damn. Raymond.
Yes, sir.
That was some heavy guitar playing.
Yes, sir.
Writing and arrangement. How did you guys all come up with that?
Well, that was me. But it was massively enhanced from the tiny concept I had in my head when Bloss and John got their hands on it and started playing it.
Isn't that the exciting thing?
It's so cool. You have this seed of an idea, and you make a little demo, and home, you're like, oh, this is sort of cool.
Yeah.
And then you get some real badass musicians to play it, and you're like, wow, that's pretty
cool.
Dude,
that's honestly, those are my, most people will never see those moments in NK band rehearsals, but those are my favorite. Coming in with a new song idea and just having everybody play on it, it's still my favorite of favorite of favorite moments. It's better than a rehearsal of going through a show. It's better than a performance. There's something about the energy of the new idea and sharing it with everybody, and everybody's collectively kind of jamming on it. Mm-hmm. There ain't nothing better. So, yeah. Man, I hope you do more of it, because that was tremendous, the musicianship. I heard a lot of Extreme influence.
Extreme.
I love that band. I know you do, too. You just saw them play at NAMM recently.
Yeah.
How much did that come into play with some of this?
Man, Extreme. That's a good call. You know, Nuno's one of my favorite guitar players. He's got phrasing and attitude and rhythm and chops that you just don't hear among many, many rock players.
And facility.
He's elite.
And he does it so musically, too.
That's so musical. So cool. And then maybe if there's any Extreme influence in this tune, it might be in the harmony vocals.
Pun intended?
No, I mean Extreme. No, I know. Influence from the band Extreme. Extreme influence.
No, that's what I heard. I also heard it in some of the guitar vocals. Tones, too. Like, you definitely got that bag, for sure.
Yeah, Nuno has that kind of bright...
driving... Overdriving.
A lot of attack. Awesome. A lot of attack on his tone. Those harmony vocals, maybe a little Extreme influence, definitely Muse influence in there. That's just another tune where I wanted to have a spaghetti western feeling to it a little bit, but it's, you know, it's a hard rock tune. Definitely some of my, you know, prog leanings creep into that one as well.
You are such a badass, Ray. You don't always walk around like you are a badass, but deep down I know that you are a badass. Where can people find you if they want to have you play on their record, arrange songs, play a gig? Where can people find you?
Well, you can find me, Be My Friend on Facebook. Probably a lot of your listeners are already connected to me on Facebook somehow. Ray Bergstrom. Find me on Instagram.
Spell it out too, because people are dumb.
Ray Bergstrom. Ray, R-A-Y. Bergstrom, B-E-R-G-S-T-R-O-M. Find me on those social media platforms. And
I know you and I are playing together July 4th, opening for The Fray at Summerfest.
We sure are.
But what other gigs are you playing around town?
Yeah, so I play a lot around town. I'm doing the musician hustle all the time. And you can catch me regularly at the Culver Hotel on Friday nights. I play gypsy jazz with my gypsy jazz band, the Icy Hot Club. Friday nights at the Culver Hotel, historic Culver Hotel in Culver City. And aside from that, you never know where I'll pop up.
I love it. Ray, you are a gentleman, you are a scholar, and you are a badass musician. Such a pleasure to have you on our show. You're going to have to come back now.
Thank you for having me, Nick.
You're going to come back for sure.
I'll come back.
And next time I'll bring my guitar. Today was about you. I didn't want to interfere with that.
Let's do a duet.
But next time, we've done a lot of radio duets
together.
That's right. We were on KLOS together.
We were.
I can't believe I was like, don't forget you want to be this far from the... wait a minute. This guy's been the guitarist in my band forever and has done a lot of these. So thank you, Ray Bergstrom.
Thank you, Nikki.
You are the man. And I'm looking forward to rehearsal and July 4th with you at Summerfest.
That'll be a blast.
Word. And on behalf of Eddie, he's not here, but he'll probably be here next week. We'll see you guys here next week.